dealt with the portal there at Ole Miss. How's your golf game? Because it's going to get displayed here today.
Well, thank God it's a scramble today. So I'm hit or miss, man. Like, I can go 69 or I can go 99. So.
Today's episode of the Coach's Pod is powered by Lindsay & Associates. Today's guest, Ole Miss defensive coordinator Pete Golding, is presented by C.R. Crawford Construction.
We're sitting right here in Cleveland, Mississippi, man, right on the golf course.
Not a bad place to be.
Not bad. Coach Jeff Williams here with Coach Bray Cook. Got a big-time guest here. Been trying to track this guy down for a long time. Defensive coordinator from Ole Miss, Pete Golding. Pete, welcome to the show, and welcome to Cleveland, Mississippi. Back home again a little bit.
Man, here. Back home. Yeah, it's awesome to be here, man. Great to be on the show.
Talk to us a little bit about your time here at Delta State and that transition, how you got here.
Yeah, obviously two of my teammates had signed. So it started with Ryan Barker, our center, was a really good player. And then Scott Eicher was our quarterback. So Ryan had committed to him in late January. Eicher was committed to Monroe at the time to play quarterback. Delta State actually ran the triple option back then. That was like 2 years after they won the national championship. Well, Eicher's a drop back passer, 170 pounds, like live arm. So he calls Barker, he's like, dude, like, I want to play together. And so he's like, I'm going to sign with Delta State. So he flips on signing day, never even took a visit. So Eicher signed on signing day. The guy at Monroe, the quarterback coach of Monroe, gets fired over it. Because he was their only quarterback in the class. He only took one visit. Went to Monroe on the OV, committed, Louisiana kid. Hey, this is our quarterback for the class. Flipped to a D2 triple option on signing day. So got the quarterback coach fired. So then they were coming up this spring, that spring of that year, and said, hey, come with us. Coach Rhodes, who was the head coach at the time, said he wants to work you out. So I came up, did a workout, receiver and DB, ran the 40. And that summer, I decided not to play baseball and come up here. Both my parents had went here. So I had the opportunity to start and play for 4 years. And I think the best thing about this place is the people. And it's just unbelievable people, a lot invested in this community. So I had a blast.
Well, before we get into your coaching career, I mean, you've got through spring ball. You dealt with the portal there at Ole Miss. How's your golf game? Because it's going to get displayed here today.
Well, thank God it's a scramble today. So I'm hit or miss, man. Like, I can go 69 or I can go 99. So, like, we'll have a couple shots, but it'll be fun. My brother's going to play with me, my old college roommate and his brother, so it'll be a good time.
Well, it's fun to get everybody back together a little
bit.
Well, Coach, one of the questions I had for you was, I've got a good friend here. He's a defensive coordinator now, Chance Albersworth. And you've been in that role here at Delta State. And you've had success in that role there as well as, you know, at Ole Miss and in Alabama. What's the difference in coaching at Delta State, coordinating that defense, and then in the SEC?
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as how you're running it and all that, I think it's very similar. I think the difference that helped me start in Division II was, like, you got to look at what a player can do, not what he can't do. And especially at this level, you got a lot of guys. Let's take a defensive lineman. Like, some of them were base down run defenders, right? Well, most of those guys didn't have pass rush ability too, right? Or they wouldn't have been at this level. They'd have been at a higher level. So you'd have to get multiple in packages and identify roles for guys. Hey, you're base down. Hey, you're in the Rhino package, right? Hey, you're in the Cheetah package, right? This can be your role this week. It's going to be third down. We're going to move you around. So I think it really helped me as a coach look at what players can do and what's their skill set. Now, let's create a package, right? And when they're in the game, all right, here's my menu, right, that I'm going to call from based on what they do well. Instead of trying to say, hey, here's my defense and trying to fit players within your defense that don't have the skill set, don't have the ability to do it. And so that was kind of my struggle when I got to Alabama, because having been D2, 1AA, and mid-major, they're all very similar, right? Everybody's not great at everything. So you package it and you're playing multiple different people within a game, right, based on what personnel and the down and distance and all that. And then when you got to Bama, it was very NFL, to where it was height, weight, speed, block protection, pass, and you had to check all the boxes. And if you didn't check all the boxes, you didn't play. And that was hard for me as a coach, right, to manage the room, to get guys to practice hard, and we come in like, hey, prepare like a starter when they know they're not going to play. Because there was still something, there was a deficiency still there, right, that they hadn't met yet. And now that was pre-portal, right? So those guys really couldn't go anywhere, right, which made it a little easier. But, I mean, that's the difference for me now, is we play 26 to 28 guys, you know, even at Ole Miss on game day. And we look at it, you know, it's like, if you're making plays for us, right, more plays for us than you are against us, you're going to play. We call it winning football. So if you're in the green from a production standpoint, you're going to have a role on game day. And what I feel like in the locker room and in the media rooms is just a completely different morale. because they know they have a role, right? They know they're going to play, so they practice hard, right? They come in, they prepare like a starter because they are. Now, it can be one of 10 different packages, and it might be 12 plays of the game, but they know what their role is, and they know they're going to play. So I think being at this level really helped me do that, yeah, right, from a package standpoint. But I think at the end of the day, I think regardless of the level, the players want to get coached hard. I think they want to get held accountable. You know, I think what's been lost some is people think you can't discipline players and coach hard like, you know, we did growing up and all that. And I think it's bullshit. You know, I think that's what they want. And we don't hide that in recruiting. You know, we're very upfront in a recruiting standpoint. Like, we want guys that are tough, competitive, wired the right way, that love football. And if you're not, you shouldn't come here, you know, because most of those guys say, hey, I want to get to the league. That's not easy. So there's going to be mornings you're going to get up and like, coach, I don't want to fucking do this. No, we're going to do this, you know, and you're going to do it our way. So I don't think it's any different at all. I think, you know, up front, I think, you know, the trenches are different. They're more athletic. They do a better job staying on their feet. I think it allows you to practice a little different. I think in the skill positions, it's really just height more than anything.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, even this conference, we had some battles with elite players. You know, they're just 5'9 instead of 6'2.
Yeah.
But they can still run. They got twitch. So this was one of my favorite conferences to coach in, to be honest with you. When the Gulf South was the old Gulf South. You know, and those offenses change week in and week out, and you still are playing against Division I players because of the transfer thing. At that point, you got to transfer down, you know, so I loved it. So I think it's a great place to learn really how to manage guys. And from a scheme standpoint, it changes week to week, a lot like high school, mm-hmm, you know, which makes you as a coordinator be a lot better, yeah, you know, than saying, hey, we're going to play 11 personnel again. Here it is, you know, and here's all your two background, and here's your 10 game. I mean, so I think it really it prepares you, I think, for being at the next level. And I also think it makes you much more appreciative of when you do actually get there, the difference of how you travel and the ability of things to recruit. And I think it allows you to do more with less. You know, when I first got to Bama, like, we had all these analysts. I'm like, coach, what the fuck do I tell them to do? Like, what do they do? I mean, like, you know, I'm used to being in the weight room and being academics and walking guys to class like we all are, you know. So that was a tough transition for me.
Well, let me ask you, just getting back to your coaching career a little bit, and that makes perfect sense, is, you know, you came here to Delta State, coached here a year, then moved on, and Southeast Louisiana defense coordinator, UTSA, Southern Miss, and you get to Alabama with Nick Saban. And I've been to a lot of Nick Saban's practices. I used to go to every clinic they put on, his Grace Clinic there was,
absolutely,
for $50. I mean, it was, yeah, unbelievable, yeah, for a poor guy like me. And so talk to me a little bit about this. I mean, you're at Southern Miss. You've had a successful career. Getting that phone call from him, I want to hear about the interview process.
Yeah.
And, you know, people don't probably know this unless you've been to practice. That guy coaches corners. He's, yeah, a position coach.
Right.
He's in the meetings.
That's,
it's not,
right,
you know, we're twirling the whistle. It's period three.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's
talk to me a little bit about, and I've heard some stories about other guys,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
getting hired, the interview, yeah, process with Coach Saban, how detailed it is.
So this was the year of actually the 10th assistant, and it wasn't going to start until like January 10th. And so I'd actually taken in December, they had state championship games in Oxford, and I was recruiting for UTSA, and Matt Luke was the head coach at Ole Miss at the time. And he said, like, hey, come in, I want to interview you. Crime Dog was the DC. He's like, hey, he needs some help. I want to bring in a back-end guy. So long story short, I'd actually taken the job at Ole Miss back in 17,
wow,
right? But the contract wasn't available until January 10th when the 10th assistant started. So then I went back to UTSA that weekend, and then I got the call from Ed Manowitz, right, from at Alabama. It was kind of Saban's, you know, right-hand man, been a GM in the league and all that. And he's like, hey, coach wants to interview you. I'm like, all right. Pruitt is taking the Tennessee job. It's not public information yet, but Pruitt's going to move on. He wants a guy to be able to come in that's been a coordinator, right? We're going to probably keep Tosh in that role. It'll be a co-deal, and we'll figure out whether you're going to coach DBs, which I'd always coach DBs up to that point, or coach linebackers like Pruitt was doing. So that was a Saturday. So they're like, look, we're going to pick you up tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. So you're going to have a private jet. So I flew on a private jet, landed in Tuscaloosa. So I walked in the coach's office at 1 o'clock. And at Bama, like, Coach Saban's office and the staff room connect, and you don't know it. You don't see it. So I walk in there, and like, hey, coach, how you doing? Pete Golden. He's like, yeah. So come follow me. So it was about 2 minutes, and we walk in. There's 30 coaches sitting in this fucking room. So I'm like, all right. So I sit down. I take my jacket off that I barred. I barred it from my safety coach. He still tells me this story. And so I get up on the board about 1:10, and about halfway through it, I'm like, dude, this is like Clemson's offense, right? Because they were playing Clemson,
yeah,
in the semifinal in 3 weeks, right? Because this was that 1st of December. And so I was on a whiteboard from 1 until about 6:58, his granddaughter had a dance recital at 7. And he's like, dude, I'm sorry, but like, I got to go to this dance recital. Miss Terry's going to divorce my ass. So he left at 6:58. We turned the tape on at that point from the UTSA games. So I went through it with the rest of the staff till about 8:30. And then Tosh took me to eat. And then at 9, coach had called Tosh, said, hey, bring him by the house. So I went by the house, walked in. Miss Terry was sitting on the couch. She's like, you want a beer? I'm like, oh, yeah. I had no idea Coach didn't drink.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm sitting on his couch. He's drinking Miller Lite. And so he's like, hey, let's walk upstairs. So he walked upstairs with me. He's like, hey, this is the role. We're going to offer you the job. And he's like, what's your thing? So I was like, shit, I'm in. So he's like, you need to call your wife? I'm like, no, we're good. So I called her and told her because she's an Ole Miss girl.
Yeah.
Right. He's got 3 degrees, the whole bit. Yeah. So she was already picking houses out. Sister was there. I hit her back with a little roll tie. She's like, all right, I'm in. So, but no, it was a very tedious process, but that was my comfort zone being D2 and 1AA. Like, you're always doing everything on the board, you know? So it wasn't some damn presentation like all the bullshit is now and all, you know, yeah. I mean, you got up on the board and it was matching patterns that fit in the run game. And a big piece of that was the quarterback plus one run game that they didn't see a lot of that at our level we saw week in and week out. So it kind of tied in, but I think, you know, that Clemson game was a big part of it for sure.
It was. Talk to him a little bit about him being a position coach.
Yeah. I mean,
he is. I mean, and you know, talk that dynamic and being the coordinator and that part of it a little bit.
So when I took the job and I got there, he's like, you're going to be here tomorrow, right? Yeah. Like, so, I mean, you're not going anywhere. So I went to the meeting. So I naturally went to the DB meeting. And that's obviously he sits in that front seat, right? And, you know, the DB coach at that time was Derek Ansley, right? So Ansley's running the remote, but like, Saban's running the meeting and like doing all the communication and all that. So I started thinking about like, I don't know. I mean, this is going to be a little tough. So then I went into Pruitt's linebacker meeting the next day. He's got dip in, feet up, just coaching them backers. So then he's like, all right, he's like, look, you could bring one guy with you. I said, hey, we need to interview this guy by the name of Carl Scott. He had been my linebacker guy everywhere I'd been. He had actually just took the DC job at ULL at the time. So we brought Carl in, interviewed him. He hires Carl. So he brings Carl and I up to his office, and he's like, all right, obviously Carl's going to coach backers. He's always coached backers. You'll be in the back end. I was like, well, coach, you know, in my opinion, especially from a recruiting standpoint, we need that minority in the back end, right? You've moved your coordinator, he's been a DB guy, to backers, and let me coach those linebackers. And we walked out of there, Carl motherfucked me so bad. So we actually, because I sat in both meetings, and I love Coach, and he's an unbelievable DB coach, but I enjoy running the room and doing all those type of things. So that's kind of the transition from DBs to backers was because of sitting in those two meetings. But it, I mean, it ended up being the best thing for Carl, obviously learning from Coach Saban, and then now he's, you know, pass game coordinator at the Seahawks, and his, you know, his career blossomed from there. So it worked out good for both of us.
Wow. Well, then you take off to Ole Miss with Lane and that crew. You got an unbelievable staff there. Y'all have had great success, you know, really close last year getting in the playoffs. Yeah. I know that's probably – I've talked to some people on your staff, and that's still a bitter taste in that part. Talk about the transition from Coach Saban to Coach Kiffin. I mean, different guys, two great
Absolutely.
Coaches.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was good for me because I think once you get to a certain point at Bama, right, like you can fall in the trap, like this is the only way to do it. Right, and there's been so many guys that have left there and try to take that blueprint, and they're not Coach Saban, right? And it's not Tuscaloosa, and it's not the history of the program, and it doesn't work. And so I learned so much while I was there of how to manage people, right, and the discipline of a program and the recruiting aspect and all that. But it's cool to go from that to Coach Kiff, to where you still have the discipline of the program, right, and meetings are run right, and the intensity of practice and recruiting. And then there's another side to it that you can still play music at practice and win games. Right, you can still do things a little different, right, and still win games. So it's been awesome, you know, to see it. But a lot of Coach Kiffin's core values come from Coach Saban. Don't get that twisted.
Yeah.
You know, so the part of the ball piece and the discipline and the self-discipline part and all that, that's very Bama. You know, it's just some of the other things, right, are more Coach Kiff. And Coach Carroll, I think, had a little spin on that for Coach Kiffin as well. So it's been really awesome to be a part of both.
He just passed away, Monty, Lane's dad.
Yeah.
He's character, you know, he's got Arkansas ties a little bit, you know, was there. Everybody's followed his career. Talk to us a little bit about your time with him. I mean, what a cool guy, but what so much knowledge defensively.
Yeah, man. I think if I wouldn't have come in from Coach Saban, like, there'd been a lot of nervous energy being around him, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the godfather defense and Inter Tampa 2 and all that. But I think being in front of Saban every day, obviously he's just ball is ball.
Yeah.
And so he was awesome when I first got there, transitioning to a new system. So we were on the whiteboard every day. And just the story times I've had with Monty were just unbelievable. And the guy's never met a stranger, you know, give you the shirt off of his back. So I really enjoyed it. I was around him, you know, about a year and a half right there. And obviously that was towards the end of it. But to hear the stories and be a part of it and all that, something I'll always remember.
What a wonderful guy.
So we were sitting here talking before a little bit about, you know, Arkansas's situation coming in next year. There's a couple of Razorbacks, former Razorbacks, that are now on your football squad.
Yeah.
How does that work as far as the NIL, the transfer portal, and how involved in that are you?
Yeah. I mean, obviously very involved. You know, I think now retention is the biggest deal, you know. And obviously, I think the portal is good for two things. I think, number one, you know, the old bait and switch of recruiting, like when we played and they tell you certain things to get you, right? And then it's not that when you get there and then you can't leave until you graduate. I think there's a little more honesty in recruiting. I know that's a tough word, those two going together, but like a little more than it has been, I feel like, as far as at least you know some of the issues going into it now, right? Because if you learn about them when you get there, you're going to leave, you know? And then I think from a scheme standpoint, I think that's the big deal right now, and I talk about in recruiting is like, you know, if you look at the last 10 years of the draft, there have been two schools that produced the most defensive players, and it's been Bama and Georgia. And so, like, I tell this group, why? What's the stability within the schemes? So coaches come and go, right? But the sustained success at Bama to me was the systems didn't change, right? So when a kid comes in as a freshman and he learns the system, that sophomore year is the same language, he gets to stay in the same system. And that third year, his most important year because he's draft eligible, it's the third year in the same system. So to me, now the portal is because of they've been lied to or the system changes, you know, and then they don't feel like, hey, their versatility or they're not being used the way they thought they were going to be. And so I think those are the two good reasons for it. I think the bad that's coming from it right now, a lot of guys that need discipline and to be held accountable, right, are not only running from that, they're getting paid to run. Right. And what's that teaching them when their marriage gets hard? Right. Or being a father gets hard. Like, what are you going to do then? So I hate that aspect of it. But, you know, now it's like free agency, which I think really gives, you know, us a benefit because Coach Kiffin had been a head coach in the league. Like, I've had no part of that before, you know, so he's really helped us through the transition of, look, man, this is just free agency. It's business. We're going to bring them in. We're going to take them to dinner. We're going to talk ball. We're going to be very specific. How can we develop them better than anybody else? How does our system fit them better than anybody else? And then obviously you got to have a good locker room from a culture standpoint. I think it's helped us in the portal because, you know, we're probably 7-3 transfer to high school guys, you know, up to this point. So a lot of these guys that are coming in are walking into a locker room that they just went through this. And so there's open arms and they understand the transition and they help with them. So it's allowed us as a coach, you got to kind of step back and simplify some things, you know, to where, you know, we're taking these guys. They've got one season. You've got one summer with them. You better get them ready to play, right? You're not getting a return on the investment. So it's really helped me as a coach, and Kiff's helped me with that. Like, hey, we got to cut some things back, right? Feel out what our bread and butter is, where's our curveballs, and we got to get these guys ready to go. So, and I think we've been able to do that. All three first-team All-SEC defenders last year were first-year transfers. You know, so the turnover happens fast and the production's happening on the field.
I completely agree that the stability in a program as far as, you know, the kids not leaving is such a big piece of it. Another big piece of that is the money that they can make now.
Right.
With NIL. Are you involved in those discussions? I know a lot of teams are hiring the general manager and those kind of things.
So when I first got there, yes. Now we're getting to the point to where we hire Billy Glasscock, who's our general manager from Texas, that does a really good job. So now between, you know, him and Kiff, you know, and then Walker from the collective, obviously last year, are those obviously from a coordinator standpoint, we have a lot of meetings of like, hey, you know, this is essentially your allotment for these positions. What are you thinking? And we'll have a say within reason. And then I think it's really important from the recruiting standpoint, you know, obviously the guy closest to him is really going to know the situation to help Billy, you know, talking to the agent and talking to the kid of where do we kind of need to be. And I feel like now, because of the stability in the schemes, because of putting it, you know, the product on the field and having the draft picks and the first rounders and all those, as long as it's within reason for us, I mean, I think, you know, for a while I got out there like, hey, we're paying more than anybody else. And that's not true. You know, I'm not even close. And so I think for the real guys, they want to come in to increase the value of their first contract. the real ones that can actually play on Sundays. And that needs to be versatility within the scheme and the development of the position and having being around guys that have done that, that can help increase the value of the first contract. I think right now, some of their guys are at the highest earning potential that they'll ever be, regardless what field they go in.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
And those are actually the guys that it shouldn't be based on the versatility of the scheme. Right. It's not going to be based on the development because they're not going to play on Sunday. And so those are the guys that are tough, right? That, you know, they're probably a backup player for us. They're probably the bottom half of the roster for us. We need quality depth. We need a four core guy, but we're not going to pay what other people are offering because that's really not what his value is. You know, so for us, I think we do a good job with the elite guys that are going to have a chance to play on Sundays because they understand the schemes and the development piece, the ability to compete for a championship. But some of those other guys, like our backups, will be the ones that we kind of lose because somebody else values them a little more than we do. And I understand from his point of view, from a business aspect, because I'm going to go make more money than my first 10 years of my real job. And that's true, you know, so that's hard to argue with a guy that actually doesn't have ability to play on Sunday. But we've been able to counter a lot of it for guys that actually been able to play on Sunday, talking about the value of the first contract and playing in this system with this development. It's going to get you drafted here compared to here. And over 4 years, you're talking about significant money.
Yeah.
Well, you talked about that, and you were at Alabama, and you talked about Georgia, you know, putting more people in the league on defense. And they used to stack guys.
Right.
I mean, you know,
right.
Guy was going to sit around and wait, you know, 2 years and
yep.
get his year playing, maybe go to the league. That's kind of – it's hard to do anymore. What do you see the difference? The portal's made an effect on that. I mean, do you think it'll ever get back that way where it is stacked up?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably about three schools right now, in my opinion, in college football, that can look a kid in the eyes and be like, hey, you're 3 to 4 years while you're here, your system's not going to change.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, I think it's us, based on the reason of why I took the job and not taking another job based on my family situation. I think it's Georgia, because that's Kirby Smart, right? Obviously, they're not firing him, and it's his defense. And then right now, I think it's Oregon with Dan Lanning.
Yeah.
Same concept. It's his defense, right? And they're not going to fire him. Anywhere else you look at, there hasn't been stability on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
And they can't look at him in the eyes and actually tell them that. And so I think it helps us from a recruiting standpoint. Like this last class, we signed 16 high school players just on defense, right? Because of that, they know they're 3 to 4 years, right? They're going to have stability within a scheme that's had success that put guys at the next level. And I think it was tough for us originally my first year because you're showing them Bama tape, right? You're showing them Bama stats or UTSA stuff. But now having done it and leading the SEC in defense and leading the country in TFLs and sacks and rush defense, now you put the product on tape here.
Yeah.
And so I think we're in a really good spot to build it foundationally from a high school standpoint, which we all want to do, right? To get them in the system early, right? Get them used to the language, right? And the culture and everything like that. So I think there's very few that have the stability to do that. I think everything else is plug and play and trying to build on free agency. And you're not building, you know, a program. You're building a team,
yeah.
You know, and that's year to year. So I think right now we got a pretty good mix of both. I think this class that we just signed, really good foundation high school, plug and play some transfer guys. I think we're at the right spot right now.
Well, you nailed it. You're not building a program anymore. You're building rosters.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like it's NFL kind of model in that part of it and everything.
You're an alum here.
Yes, sir.
You're familiar with the area.
Yeah.
We're not. Where do we need to go tonight after this tournament? Where's the spot to eat?
What's
the ins and outs of Cleveland?
Yeah, man. So Crawdads is an awesome spot. So it's a steak seafood spot right outside of town. Really cool venue. Backdraft downtown, right? Really good menu. Don't kind of feel like you're in Cleveland. If you want to sit on the porch and watch the playoffs, Hey Joe's got an awesome back porch, good beer menu. If you're a liquor guy, no liquor, but beer menu, you know. And then so some of my establishments are gone now since I've been in college. Probably a big reason for that. But the Cotton House is pretty sweet. They got on the fourth floor.
That's where we're staying.
So they got a bar on the fourth floor, right, with a balcony kind of overlooks the town and stuff like that. And really good menu in there, too. So a lot of good spots.
And then what about Oxford? When we go visit Oxford, where do we need to hit down there?
So depending on what you're in the mood for, I think Lenora's is an awesome little Italian steak spot.
Okay.
Right on the square. Bure, really good. They got the grill house on the corner. Just redid the upstairs.
Okay.
Awesome. One of the better steak restaurants is Tico's. Started in Jackson. Was a branch from Ruth Chris. Same family, right? And now they put one in Oxford, which is an awesome steak spot and all that. There's so many, dude. That's the one good thing about it. Now, I try to stay off the square. I stay away from it. Sure. But y'all probably be funkies, get you some pizza, daiquiris, right? Sure. Head down to the library. You know, yeah. You'll remember going. You won't remember leaving. It's a good spot, though.
Yeah, well, these are the hard-hitting questions.
That's right. That's why we got to get the information. People need to know, you know. Well, let's get back to ball a little bit.
Yeah.
You guys, you know, y'all were right there last year. I mean, yeah. Right there, you know, a lot of people thought you should have gotten the playoffs. It didn't happen. Well, this playoff thing, I think, is a great, great deal because the SEC is so tough. You know, that the people that finished third or fourth, they got to take a chance to win at Ohio State. You know, you look at them last year.
Right.
You know, they didn't win their conference or whatever, and they go on to win the national championship. What's the mindset over in Oxford right now? You know it's going to be a tough road in the SEC, but the getting that playoffs and make a run, you're knocking at the door right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the big thing for us, to be honest with you, is not focusing on the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know, and I think last year, you know, we got to control what we can control. And that's where I probably changed about 10 years ago. It used to be like defensively, like, hey, we're going to hold them to less than 3.3 yards per rush, right? Less than 5.6 yards per attempt, 70% on third down, all the stuff we grew up like, hey, you need to check all these boxes. What I hate about that, you could do that and still lose the game.
Yeah.
Right? So like us defensively, right, it's our responsibility to outplay the opposing defense, right? Meaning if they get 5 turnovers, 3 ain't good enough. We got to get 6, right? I mean, if they got 10 third down stops, we need 11. Right. So that mindset of the spot the ball mindset and the outplay the opposing defense, in my opinion, cost us 3 games last year. Everybody want to talk about it. Yeah, you held them to 13 points. Well, yeah, we only scored 10. We didn't win the game.
Yeah.
And we control that. We don't control how we get on the field. We control how we get off. And, you know, all 3 of those games were up with under 3 minutes to go in the game with the ball. And then we get on the field with an opportunity to get off the field on 4th down in all 3 games, you know, and didn't execute when we had to. Now there's a lot of games that they did, you know, but they got to understand in this league, the consistency of that. Right. And the elite teams are going to do it when they have to. And so I think Coach Kim does a really good job in practice of making very competitive environments, try to put them in those situations of overtime and 4th down periods and short yardage and be very specific. Right, to try to have good plans on both sides of the ball, but also to try to put the pressure on the players, you know, because that's really hard to simulate, you know, that now there's a minute 20 left, it's 4th and 6, right? You stop them, you win, right? And then here's LSU, they tie it overtime, and you haven't trailed the entire game, and you lose, you know, based on, hey, there's 2 4th downs on the last drive. Boys, this ain't got to be close, all right? Let's not fumble the ball before halftime, give them 3 points, right? That's a 2-possession game. There's so many things on both sides of the ball, right, that you look back, obviously, in all the years that you don't make it, like, hey, here it is.
Yeah.
Well, let's not let it come to that. And so, you know, our approach is, you know, one snap at a time, spot the ball, control what we can control, you know, getting these guys from a fundamental standpoint, right, getting them technically sound. And then just the football IQ now, because you have a short window to get them ready. And to me, the big difference between NFL and college, like, there's no formation in the boundary. There's no unbalance, right? You're not getting tempo until there's 2 minute. So you're seeing so many alternative things through college that you have checks and adjustments for because it's such a big part of the game. But that's what I love for us because we see that on day one from Kiff, right, and Charlie. Yeah. It's day one. You're getting unbalanced. You're getting quads, right? You're getting FIB. You're getting motion. So it sucks, right, being a new guy, like, goddamn, this is day one, right? Does that make sense? Excuse my language. But by the time you come to the season, there's very few things that you hadn't seen. So this year, man, it's just about controlling what we can control, right, not worrying about the scoreboard. I felt like, you know, we played dictated on that some, right? That's what really pissed me off about the Arkansas game. Some guys got the opportunity in the 4th quarter to go out and show what they could do, and we didn't play well, right, and give up 21 points in the 4th quarter. Right now, it wasn't a game, but what if it was? We're going to lose the game. You know, you don't know. Same thing in the Duke Bowl game, right? I mean, we got them to, whatever, 6 or 7 points with 5 minutes left, and then, I mean, what are we doing? You know, so I think right now just the mindset of spot the ball mindset. We don't care. Parking lot, playground, playoffs, man. We're here to compete, right? And you're here to do your job. And so I think that'll be a big part for us.
You hit that, and you pretty much answered the question for my next question. Is Coach Kiffin likes to go forward on fourth down a lot? And that we could say, and I coach, we all have been around it, is nobody says it publicly, but a lot of defense coordinators are going, God, this guy, you know, the head coach, and I've been on staffs, like, I mean, hey, punt the ball, whatever, you know. what's the mindset? Because that has to be talked about in your room. Like, that's going to happen. We might not make it, but we can change the whole outcome by getting on the field. And you kind of answered that question. But talk to us. I mean, you got to be prepared for that, because he might go for it on his fourth and two on his own 30. Right. I mean, and there's – he doesn't just – snap that up. Yeah. I mean, there's analytics involved. And that's
absolutely
Is that talked about before?
100%. You know, and I think he does a really good job in front of the whole team. Like, in order for me to go for it on fourth down, Coach Kiff to go for it on fourth down on the minus side of the field, that's because he has complete confidence in the defense, right? And you should look at that as like, hey, he's got confidence in you based on your ability, right, and your performance, what you've done. Right. Knowing, obviously, we're trying to keep you off the field, hopefully.
Yeah.
Right. But knowing, hey, damn it, if they make a four down stop, then now we got to.
Yeah.
You know, so he does a really good job of kind of explaining it to the team. But I do think it's more important now than ever, like I talked about, to where you've got to make it about you versus the opposing other unit. Mm-hmm. So then if you're going three and out, you ain't got guys bitching on the sideline. Like, why aren't we scoring points? It don't matter. They're going three and out. Right. We got to answer. It ain't got nothing to do with the offense. You know, so I think that mindset really, really matters. But obviously from a coaching standpoint, we always come back like, hey, damn, a punt's a good play. Right? I mean, one of the better plays in ball, right? But it really it changed for me of opposing offenses, even if they weren't, right, risk takers coming into our game, they're going to be based on how we play the game. So that really changed, like, got to have it downs and the preparation of got to have it downs from a coordinating standpoint. Like, you're coming into a game, they might have went for it once on fourth down all year. They're going to go for it multiple times just based on knowing we're going to do it. So we work on that a lot. Coach Kiss puts us in those situations of practice a lot because we're going to do it. And so obviously a lot of analytics like you talked about are involved in it. But also I think it's confidence on offense first, right? Knowing, hey, we got a good play and we're going to get it. But then I think there's another piece to it. It's like, hey, we can put them out there. Let's go make a stop. Let's hold them to a field goal, right? And more than not, right, we'll win because of it.
Yeah. Are you on social media?
I mean, I'm not a big social media guy, no, that's true.
Well, there's a big discussion going on right now across all platforms. You've been to a zoo, you've seen the silverback gorilla. I mean,
yes, sir.
One gorilla, 100 men. Who wins?
What 100 men are we talking about here?
John Daly got involved in it.
What did he say? Golf balls, 10 Miller Lights?
Yeah.
Yeah. If I got to pick the 100, I feel good about my 100.
That's for the real, for the clip.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Coach, we'll get you off here, man. This is a beautiful place. I haven't been down here. I've played over here in this stadium a few times back 100 years ago. And I think the last time I was over, it was a massive rainstorm, and there was two people in the bleachers. I think back in
there, they
didn't have lightning detectors. There's things going off left and right. And what a beautiful place. And appreciate you sitting down with us in that part. Brave, you got anything?
Let's go lose some golf balls. I saw the stadium was just right here.
Right here, man.
There's a
you shank it off of one. Yeah, you shank it off of one, you can get the scoreboard.
Cooley, I apologize. But no, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank enjoyed you. It. Yeah.
Appreciate you, man.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. I'm going to need that.
Yes, all righty. Thanks, Coach.
Yep, absolutely.
That was awesome.